This is Around and About, focusing on people and events in our community.
The majestic canopy of the American forest is a beautiful sight to behold, but what we now see is the forest was once dominated by a tree that is all but extinct. Joining us today on Around and About is Associate Professor of Biology at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, Dr. Hill Craddock, with a brief history of one of America's vanishing trees.
The American chestnut tree was once one of the most important trees in the forest. In the eastern United States, it grew from Mississippi and Georgia and Alabama all the way up through the Appalachian Mountains into Maine and southeastern Canada. In some parts of its range, it was one of the biggest trees. In western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee, it achieved its sort of greatest development, more than 100 feet tall, competing with tulip poplar in the Cove Forest. So one of the truly largest trees in the forest and very fast growing. On some sites, probably the fastest growing hardwood tree. It was very abundant. In some parts of its natural range, it was truly the dominant species. Much of the canopy in those areas was probably chestnut. If you were a bird flying over the forest and looked down, you'd be seeing an unbroken canopy of chestnut leaves and flowers and fruit. It was enormously valuable to the ecosystem because its production of food. All parts of the tree were used by animals, the leaves, the bark, the wood. You know, there were actually insects that bored into the wood and made their homes there, but mostly for the nuts. The chestnuts are sweet, edible, delicious, they're nutritious, and they're born on the tree every year. Because chestnut trees bloom in the summer, they're not so affected by late spring frosts. Partly because of that late blooming, they produce nuts every year, which makes them very different from other nut-producing trees in the forest, like acorns and hickory nuts, which are produced in alternate years or maybe even only occasionally, once every 3 to 5 years. The wood was used for every imaginable use, from building timbers to fence posts to furniture. The nuts represented a staple food for the people that lived in the forest. We know that Native Americans harvested them in the fall and dried them. They could be stored for years, dried like we would store a dried bean. Then they could be ground into flour and used in cooking or simply boiled and reconstituted that way. But mostly as a staple food, they were probably ground and used in flour and fry bread and mixed with cornmeal to make cornbread. A real staple food.
The American chestnut was a valuable part of the forest's ecosystem, providing food for animals and humans. These fast-growing trees were also a source of hardwood and played an integral role in the economy of the eastern United States.
After the European contact, they became a cash crop. And it was, along with livestock, it was probably the most important cash crop for the southern Appalachians. There are stories of railroad boxcars full of chestnuts heading from the mountains into the cities, mostly in the Northeast, New York, Philadelphia, Boston. All of that changed in 1904 when a terrible fungus disease was discovered on chestnut trees growing in New York City. It was actually in the Bronx Zoo, the Bronx Zoological Gardens, where the first dead chestnut trees were seen. A scientist from Brooklyn, from the Brooklyn Botanical Garden, went all the way over to the Bronx to look at them and discovered that it was a new fungus, never before seen to science. It has a funny name. The name of the fungus is Cryphonectria parasitica, and it's a parasite. It attacks the chestnut tree, and it eats the bark. It literally eats the bark right off the tree, and once you've girdled the tree by killing its bark, the tree dies from that point up. It caused a disease which came to be known as the chestnut blight.
The parasitic fungus was unstoppable and soon spread across the U.S.
The chestnut blight caused a pandemic. Now, lots of people know what an epidemic is. That's when a lot of people get sick. In a pandemic, every individual in the population is affected. This disease spread more or less concentric circles away from New York, about 30 miles per year, and it killed every American chestnut. By the 1930s, it had swept southward and got to Tennessee, leaving in its wake billions of dead chestnut trees. The scale and the scope of the destruction is hard for us to imagine. It was a catastrophe, ecological proportions that has not been seen in North America since the last ice ages. An entire species was completely removed from its ecological niche. Within 50 years, the American chestnuts were gone from the forest canopy. There's no other example in the history of forest pathology of a disease that so quickly and completely removed its host. Now, the chestnut trees are not extinct. It turns out that the fungus only eats the bark, but it doesn't kill the roots. So the roots often persist alive and can send up new shoots. These new shoots then can grow into a new chestnut tree. In the shade of the forest, because of course the other trees have now closed the canopy, so there are oak trees and hickories and maple and ash and all the other trees in the forest. In the shade of that forest, the chestnut trees grow very slowly. So if you walk in the woods now, you might see a chestnut tree, but it's going to look like a little bush. It's going to be a suppressed seedling, a suppressed sapling. It might only be 4 feet tall, 6 feet tall, occasionally taller. And very rarely, they get enough sunlight to bloom.
The American chestnut is no longer dominating the forest. Fewer and fewer new shoots survive each year.
The American chestnut trees that are out there in the woods today are doomed to die in the sense that as soon as they get any bark on them at all, the fungus eats the bark. They grow up slowly through the forest, and they can escape blight for many years. But by the time they get some bark on them, they're due for an attack of fungus. It turns out that the fungus also lives, Cryphonectria also lives on oak tree bark. So even if the chestnuts were completely extinct, we would still have this fungus. Now, it actually causes a disease on some oak trees. Anywhere from mild symptoms to big, ugly cankers and tumors on the bark of oaks. So the fungus is there in the woods. It's here to stay. And so the baby chestnut trees, they're not really babies because they might be 100 years old, but they look like shrubs. Those root sprouts are at risk of getting chestnut blight. And we see that in the forest after a disturbance. And a disturbance could be anything that removes the canopy. It could be gypsy moths. It could be forest fire. It could be a timber harvest. When we disturb the forest and release the chestnut trees from that shady, suppressed state, they grow very quickly. And within 4 or 5 years, they might bloom. And within 5 or 6 years, they start getting chestnut blight. And by 7 or 8 years, there's been another mini blight pandemic, and they're pretty much all dead. And by that time, the clear cut or whatever it was, the disturbance has passed, and the other trees close over the canopy again. And hopefully, they return to their shrub-like state in the understory, but not always. Often they don't survive this cycle of release and re-blight. So the number of root sprouts out there is dwindling.
Chestnut blight destroyed the American chestnut in less than half a century. The future of this forest giant will depend on the intervention of science. Tomorrow on Around and About, we return with Dr. Hill Craddock and discuss the future of the American chestnut tree. For Around and About, this is Rabbit.
Around and About is a production of WUTC, with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. This is Around and About, focusing on people and events in our community.
The American chestnut tree once towered over much of the American forests. In 1904, a parasitic fungus was discovered that destroys the bark of these majestic trees and kills them. Known as the chestnut blight, this fungus spread rapidly, and within 50 years, all of the American chestnut trees were gone from the forest. Dr. Hill Craddock, Associate Professor of Biology at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, is working with other scientists and foundations to restore the American chestnut to our forests.
In the 1930s, the U.S. Forest Service, the government, started breeding chestnut trees in earnest. The idea was that this fungus had come from Eastern Asia, China, or probably Japan. And if you look in China and Japan, what you see is that the Chinese chestnut trees and the Japanese chestnut trees are resistant to this fungus. It lives on the bark, but it doesn't kill the tree. And if you grow the seeds of a Chinese chestnut tree, they inherit blight resistance from their mother and father. So it was understood that through this heredity, this genetic disease resistance, we could make a hybrid of the American chestnut, and that some of those offspring, some of those children, those Chinese American chestnut trees would be also blight resistant. The problem was that the Chinese chestnut trees, although they make a wonderful orchard tree, if you want to plant one in your yard and eat chestnuts, that's the one you should plant, the Chinese chestnut. They don't do well in the forest. They're not competitive with the other forest trees in the Appalachian Mountains, and particularly in the South. When we actually tried that, we tried replacing the American chestnut with Chinese chestnuts, importing millions of chestnut seeds from China and distributing them through the TVA and the Boy Scouts and the Conservation Corps. And what we found was that, different from the American chestnut, the Chinese chestnuts don't grow in the shade at all. They won't survive in the forest as a shrub at all. They need full sun. So an orchard is where they're adapted. So the hybrids, these Chinese-American hybrids, are intermediate in their growth form. They're sort of halfway between the orchard form of the Chinese and the American chestnut tree, which is not good enough.
Replanting the American chestnut is not an option. The fungus causing blight will destroy the young tree as soon as the bark appears. Through gene splicing and adaptive breeding, scientists hope to produce a blight-resistant American chestnut.
In the early 1980s, a new project was formed. It's called the American Chestnut Foundation. The American Chestnut Foundation was formed with the single purpose of restoring the American chestnut to the forest. Most of the effort that the American Chestnut Foundation has spent on the restoration is chestnut breeding. The Chestnut Foundation's breeding program is based on back crossing. The object of back cross breeding is to move the genes for blight resistance from the Chinese species into the American species while conserving as much as possible of the American gene pool, so that we have a tree that's 99.9% American and that the only genes from the Asian parent are the genes for blight resistance. Knowing that the American chestnut trees were supremely well adapted to the Appalachian forests, the assumption is that those are the genes we want. The genes we want from China are the genes that are lacking from our American population, which are the genes for blight resistance. So the backcross program includes an original Chinese-American hybrid that then we backcross to an American chestnut tree. And so those offspring then are 3/4 American, 1/4 Chinese, more or less. And if we repeat that again, we get a tree that's 7/8 American, 15/16 American, 31/32 American. So we're ending up with a tree that's very, very, very close to its American parent. At every generation level, we select for blight resistance, and only the most blight resistant trees are advanced to the next generation. We started very intensely in the early 1980s on this backcross program. We have 25 years of chestnut breeding now under our belt. We are very close to producing an American chestnut type tree. It's going to look American. It's going to talk American. It's going to grow just like the American chestnut. The one difference that it has is that it has blight resistance. They will be fully blight resistant trees.
The research is continuing, but the new hybrid American chestnut is not quite ready to retake its role as the dominant tree of the forest.
These trees will be produced, and they'll be produced locally. The Chestnut Foundation has chapters that are breeding for local adaptation in each of the states in which the chestnut tree grew. So Georgia folks will be breeding Georgia chestnut trees. The Tennessee folks are breeding Tennessee chestnut trees. And the Carolinas, Kentucky, and Virginia right on up to Maine. Within the next few years, though, they should be available to the public for planting. At the moment, they're available for experimental plantings. Our first large-scale experiments will be on Forest Service property in the National Forest, Cherokee National Forest. And we have some cooperating researchers who are planting orchards on their private land for the continued selection of the hybrids.
With the return of the American chestnut, you can expect the natural forests of the eastern United States to change dramatically.
Our hope is that the hybrids that we plant will survive and begin reproducing on their own in a natural environment, and that the progeny, the descendants of these hybrids, will naturalize into the forest. The consequence of that for the forest will be a change. The forest will change. And I would argue that it's going to be a change for the better, in that we'll be returning to the ecosystem a tree that was once an essential component of a healthy forest. The food value alone of the chestnuts will be enough to justify all the expense of putting them into the forest and getting them back. By food value, I mean not so much for humans, because I'm not talking about commercial orcharding for chestnuts. I'm talking about a natural forest ecosystem. We have anecdotal evidence that game abundances of all kinds of animals, birds and mammals, were much higher before the chestnut blight. Now, lots of variables involved in these kinds of forest changing. But yes, if the chestnut trees are once again dominant, then that space they occupy in the forest will be theirs. And other trees will be competing with the chestnut once again. So there might be fewer oak trees and fewer hickory nuts. We're restoring a component of the healthy ecosystem that was there before the chestnut blight pandemic.
Dr. Hill Craddock is supported in his efforts by the Summerfield Johnson Endowment for Restoration of the American Chestnut, the American Chestnut Foundation, the American Forest Endowment, and Dollywood. Working with graduate research students, Dr. Craddock is leading projects that involve breeding, planting, and molecular biology through the DNA sequencing of chestnut trees. Graduate students are also documenting the oral history of the American chestnut through interviews with a generation who witnessed the terrible destruction caused by chestnut blight. For more information, visit the web at utc.edu and enter American Chestnut in the search field. For Around and About, this is Rabbit.
Around and About is a production of WUTC, with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC.